Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday! And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome, guys. Going to be all over the place today. I'm going to talk to you about some back and forth between Conor McGregor and Sugar Sean, plus I'm going to weigh in on the drama surrounding John Jones and Tom Aspinall, and I got to deliver a message to Kamaru Usman. Lots to get to, everybody. Let's begin with this. Joe Rogan has stated that the Olympics are a giant scam. There's evidence for believing they are a scam. All the money and revenue that comes in and it doesn't go to the athletes. I am starting to feel more and more that way. The Olympics has really served as nothing to me other than a disappointment as I've gotten older. And I did believe it in my youth. I don't watch sports and I watch the Olympics nonstop. I love them. Love them. And they're not mainstream sports, right? You're not going to get football out there, for example. And what do you do? What do you do when you have some of these niche sports that can't get on TV? You got a niche sport like gymnastics, right? The greatest athletes in the world are gymnasts and you can't get on TV. Or what do you do when you do the world's hardest sport like wrestling, but wrestling can't get on TV? Or what do you do when you're swimming, which has been around forever and it's so competitive and frankly, it's realistic. Like there's never a time in life you're going to need breakdancing, which apparently is an Olympic sport. There's never a time in life that you're going to need field hockey or ribbon this or that. And they're very cool, but you don't need them. There's a time you might have to outswim somebody. Sure. There was definitely a time where people needed to outswim other people. It's very realistic. So you have something comes every 4 years, you recognize these people. And you bring them a media opportunity they couldn't previously get. Is that worth it? Is that fair? Is that the deal? And to Joe Rogan's point, well, it's certainly not equitable. It certainly is not an equitable deal. There's not a lot of other things where you could put people on TV, make them your show, and not compensate them. So it's a rather fascinating position. But the greatest trick that the devil ever did is convincing the world that he didn't exist. And I believe that I stole that from Mark Cuban, who stole that from Kaiser Soze. And I think Mark Cuban was using it in the same capacity. Greatest trick that the devil ever did. The greatest trick that the Olympic Committee ever did is convincing the athletes they should not be paid. They got them to accept it. They got them to accept not being paid. And once they did, it was easy for the scam that the NCAA ran. Now that's the scum of the earth. I mean, that is the true crooks out there, is the NCAA, but they're not that much different than the IOC. They're only bigger crooks because they killed more people. Like, I mean, what's a more dangerous guy, right? The guy that killed 100 people or the guy that killed one? It's one of those things. I mean, they're both pretty rotten. They both go into that highest category, but I guess the guy that killed 100, well, that's the NCAA. They're around all year, every day, and the Olympics comes every 4 years. I mean, that's the difference in your distinctions here. And, I mean, what do you do? The history of the Olympics you might find fascinating, guys. History of the Olympics, it started with these rich guys. And they did well. They had money, they had things like this. And they were drinking. They're drinking at a bar, and they decided they're gonna hold these events. And it was a joke, but it was for their local town. It started off in their local town. The word kind of got around, and this date did come, and they did hold these events. But you couldn't be a worker. You know, you had these rich guys that sit around there drinking beer, and they try to come up with the Olympics. But you can't be a worker because, see, you're a professional. Like, let's say you're a worker back then. You're swinging the pickaxe. Well, that in and of itself is going to make you stronger. If you show up to their, like, there was no coaches. There was no actual sports. There was no dues or gym fees or lift weights this way or train on that day or eat this food. There was none of that back then. So the wealthy guys, the well-to-do boys, where their fathers were rich, decided it had to be amateur. But what they meant back then, because there was no pro, what they meant back then is you couldn't work. If you were a worker, if you were from the fields, if you were a farmer, but you actually worked, you were not eligible to come to their event, which was the Olympics. That's how that started. Are you aware of that? So that's why over time, so many different things have changed. So many historical things have changed about the Olympics, and they banned your ability to be paid. They banned your ability to be a professional before there even was sports that had an amateur or a professional distinction. In case you're wondering why and how, that is why and that is how. So when you fast forward the tape and you get to a position like this, it really is an amazing spot. And I know so many people think that they were taken advantage of. So many people think that that is taking advantage. But if you came from the wrestling community, I tried to make the Olympic team. It was a really important thing to me. I had a real focus and dedication. And I looked at it a different way, and I was very disappointed when it didn't happen because of how I revered the games. But from my standpoint, and still true to this day with the wrestlers, we don't have a better option. In fact, we don't have another option. There is nowhere else we can go and get put on TV. There's no other platform that we can go to impress a sponsor or impress upon you, our peers, that we deserve a good job, a pat on the back. We don't have something like that. So it is difficult for me to relate. I don't look at that and then think that because the Olympics brought in a bunch of money, it should be peeled off. I can look around to our own arena of wrestling, which is not sold out. And I can realize we are an expense to this event. So I will look at it and go, okay, what we can get in the media opportunities and the camp situations. I mean, it's not really a rich man's sport, but if you're going to go down this path, I still really appreciate the Olympics. But there's other people that are going to be completely sold out. You look at track and field, right? There's a massive revenue. There's a massive ratings for that. And they might have a different opinion, but I don't know where else it is that they would go. Like in Joe Rogan's spot, when you're saying it's a scam, for it to be fooling people and misleading people, for it to be marketed one way when it is actually something very different, I just described every business in the Fortune 500. There is no business in the Fortune 500 that is what you think it is. There's very few things in your life that are as you think they are. You just haven't caught up yet. So I don't know if it's a scam. I think it's pretty open to tell people once every 4 years, we're going to set this aside. Because it's once every 4 years, it's going to bring a lot of media and a lot of attention, and it's going to make it a more coveted trophy, which is what we're doing to get you, the greats, to come and participate. But this is the deal. Sign on or don't. And for some people, they go back to a wonderful life. Like, I'll look at the dream team in the basketball, which should not be there and should have allowed to be there. But that's on basketball. They don't want to challenge them. Anybody that can put five guys together and wants to take on our dream team should be able to. And the dream team better have more points at the end of four quarters or this other group of five goes. But that's basketball. Basketball's quit. Basketball took their foot off the gas and it made themselves uncompetitive. But they will leave that. They will leave that Olympics where, yes, they were used, and yes, the ratings were great, and no, they didn't get what they should have, and they'll go back to something really great. You'll get the guy that gets out of the swimming pool. He didn't go back to anything. Or you get the wrestler that gets out of there, and he's got a cauliflower ear and some good memories to tell on the bar stool down the road because he also didn't get anything, but he didn't give anything up. I mean, it wasn't a situation where somewhere else was treating him better. And for it to be a scam, that's what it would need to be. To be a scam, it would have to be presented one way and not. Sure, there's marketing, and it is once every 4 years, and it's something that a lot of people want to do. And the International Olympic Committee is laughing all the way to the bank, and they make their budgets, and they make these deals, and they talk about it lost money, and that is all a scam. That is not, zero of that is true. It makes a lot of money every time. On time, every time, which is why every country bids for it. There is not a loss at the Olympic Games. There is a way of accounting that gets real fuzzy, but again, I'm describing everything. So is it a scam? No, no. Is it ran by dirtbags? Oh yeah, yeah for sure. Connor, this is kind of a saga that just isn't ending. Nobody's made much of it. Dana does not appear to be upset with Connor McGregor. And Connor doesn't appear to be upset with Dana. And what I mean by that, they haven't said as much. They haven't even alluded to that. But they are on drastically different pages publicly. So you got to make sure that you understand this, okay? When I say that Dana and Connor haven't come at each other, neither one has blamed the other one. Everything seems to be understood and going smooth. But the information that they both give us is drastically different. Generally, in a situation like that, that means you rely on the information that Dana gave you, and what the other guy is doing, whoever it might be, in this case, Connor, what he is doing is marketing. He's telling a story, he's marketing, he's having fun. But when he's saying left and this guy's saying right, you guys are drastically apart, but there's no fight, there's no argument. Generally, what that would mean, Dana's giving you accurate info and the other guy, McGregor in this case, is having fun. But I'm not convinced that that's what's going on here either. Like, let's just back the tape up, okay? Connor's going to fight. He puts this out. Every time he does it, people get excited. But it was really easy to understand that he wasn't because of our understanding of the procedures and the rules as it pertained to USADA at that time. Okay, I'm backing you up about 10 months. So UFC 300 starts to roll around, and it's a new testing company. But adhering to the opinion of USADA was already stated that that was going to be done, and that would exclude Conor McGregor from competing at 300, but it didn't stop the headlines. So then Conor McGregor decides, hey, I want to fight, and I'm going to do an international fight week. And he puts on a full court press. Like, the way that Conor went about and the way that Conor achieved getting that fight was great. Was great. You guys missed it. You missed what he did. You missed the manipulation. You missed the game that was at play there. And you know real easy if you win or lose, do you get the contract or not? He did. It was great. But when the fight ends up falling through, nobody seemed upset. Nobody seemed upset, except us, the fans, right? We missed out on it. And the cover-up is always worse than the crime. I do not believe that Conor McGregor pulled out due to a toe injury. But I also don't believe that Conor McGregor had a toe injury. I have to share for you, this is Chael's opinion. I've never bought that story. And I never suspected anything. I never suspected anything until Conor McGregor took a picture of a toe and posted it on his social media. It was then and only then that I go, oh, we got a cover-up going on. Right? You would post your face in the picture. You would prove that it was your foot, was my thought. That's not an expert piece of evidence. I'm just sharing with you, it's really hard for me to believe that a guy who was broken in half, who had a compound fracture, who was going to get rushed to the hospital and rushed into surgery, But he was such a professional. He calls Joe Rogan over to sit down and he finishes an interview because that was the job. It's hard for me to believe that he pulled out of a job a month early for a discolored pinky toe, which may or may not be broken and may or may not belong to him. I, moreover, had a larger issue with it because how did it happen? And that's where a lot of guys get jammed up, right? Like robbing the bank, there's all sorts of planning put into that. And it works a lot. They get the money. They have successfully robbed the bank. Now they've got to get out of the bank. And now they got to get out of town before the helicopters and the other cars. Like, they put so much into robbing the bank, but they don't plan the getaway, is my point. So if Connor hurt his toe, how? And who was there? And what were you doing when you stubbed your toe? Did you roll it? Hit something? Did you kick and a guy blocked it? Who was that guy? Who was the guy? Because for a guy that has a bad leg and is coming off a compound fracture, the mere thought that you would be throwing that kick without the proper padding on is really tough for me to believe. So I'm just asking a question. And we've never been told. But it's relevant to the whole story. It's not relevant to Connor pulling out or why he pulled out or if he wants to keep his rehab private. Like, that isn't the point at all. The point is, the UFC knows the actual reason. And whatever that reason is, it is disqualifying the UFC's belief that Connor is going to come back. And that's what this all boils down to. If a guy pulled out because of a stubbed toe, that guy's not coming back. Not because he's not saying he's not. Not because he doesn't want to. Not because he's unwilling or we can't get a contract done. I'm not booking him. I can't book a guy who can't work if he has a stubbed toe. I can't book a guy like that. And then if I'm armed with something that it is much more severe, there's a legal issue and or consequence that is going to prevent this person from flying to this country where the fight is being held. I now can't book him. And I can't book him. If I'm not coming to that country, I literally can't book him if he can't extradite himself. And you start to run in to what is the real reason? And why are these guys on such different pages? Why is Connor talking about I'm going to... Connor's very smart. He's very good. He's very good. And he's reproved that by getting the fight against Chandler on June 29th. And the way that he went about getting it, he's as sharp as ever. Sharp as ever. But there is something going on there where he says he's going to fight within 2 months. Well, there's no venue in 2 months. There's no open venue and or date in 2 months. And so he says, well, I'm going to fight by the end of the year. There is no open venue by the end of the year where we don't have a main event that has already been rumored. And we haven't had a single rumored main event that didn't come true. We heard it was going to be Morale and Marab at the Spear. We heard it was going to be Izzy versus DDP in Perth. We heard it's going to be Jones and Michik at Madison Square. Like, there isn't a single one that hasn't come to fruition rumor-wise. There's no open dates. So, very, very big slide by Connor. Why did he say that? Why did he say he's going to fight in a couple of months when he knows the media has access to Dana? And he knows now that Dana is in a position as a CEO of a publicly traded company where the words that come out of his mouth are no longer whatever he wants. There is hard and fast rules about what can and cannot be stated if it can direct share price. So keeping information about your biggest star, I mean, I'm just saying, Connor knows Dana's going to be asked, and that Dana, in a respected manner, is going to give information that is opposite what Connor gave. So, do you have a hustler? I'm talking about Connor right now. Do you have a hustler? That's how we started. He did a hustle on June 29th to get that fight. Do we have a hustler, or do we have a guy that is losing his mind? Do we have a guy that has now separated himself from reality? And it's a very fair question for me. Like it's not. It's just a matter of time until that lifestyle gets you. It's a matter of time until you are not the person you used to be. That person is dead. And I don't know that it's that severe. I can just tell you What Connor has said, opposite information that we know from a legal standpoint to need to be true, is so vastly different. It's as though we're dealing, right? Are we dealing with somebody who has separated themselves from reality or has been separated from reality? Or are we dealing with that same hustler that we've always dealt with and he's playing a different game? And to this point, he's always played it very, very well. I'm open. I'm open to it. What I'm not open to is the media going to Connor and getting one answer that is hot, going to Dana and getting a different answer that is cold, and then never calling them out. Never calling them out for doing drastically different statements. And it's the same interviewer. And it would just seem as though you would say, okay, well, that's interesting because he just told me. But they haven't done that yet. And we don't have a lot of journalists in this sport. We got a lot of cowards. We got cowards in the cage. We got cowards out of the cage that for obvious reasons just aren't going to ask those questions because they were happy to have access in the first place. So we may never know. But there's something happening. And between Connor saying he's going to fight this year and Dana saying he's not, there's not two thoughts here. He says this and he's not. There's your answer. He is not. So if he's not fighting this year and he didn't fight last year, I'm not positive he fought the year before, but I think that he did and it was a compound fracture. Why are we pretending that he's ever going to fight again? Why are we pretending that? And if we are going to keep pretending that, who are we going to pretend it's going to be against? Wins Sean O'Malley versus Conor McGregor? Think that's a rhetorical question? No, it's not. It's a literal question that I posted on my community page on YouTube. 15,000 people weighed in. That's a lot. That is a massive focus group, okay? Massive companies like Johnson & Johnson and ExxonMobil will bring in a focus group of 5 people. I got 15,000. Who do you think won? Tie. 50-50. I've never seen that. I've never had it happen to me, never on my community page, but I've also never seen that. I haven't seen that in a presidential election. I haven't seen that anywhere. 15,000? That's a real number. That came in inside of a couple of hours. 50-50. And all these are, by the way, when you do a who could win between Sean O'Malley and Conor McGregor, right? Sean's a 35-pounder that has to keep his weight under control. It's like he's a 35-pounder that got bigger. He has to keep his weight under control. He's got a fight coming up. Conor wants to fight at 185, but is willing to come as far down as 170. Like, I mean, you have a massive disparity. And 15,000 people of you, hardcores, that's what we have over here. We have the hardcores. 15,000 of you, half of you believe O'Malley can do it. You know what that means? You know what that means? It's a popularity contest. It means you like him more. Half of you sided with O'Malley over the biggest draw in the history of the business. The guy that had a $27 million box office 3 weekends ago that was disrupted by a discolored pinky toe that may or may not have belonged to him. 50-50. I know that O'Malley is popular, but Conor McGregor is not licensed. And you can talk about he's the biggest draw in our sport, but I don't know how fair that is. I mean, if we're playing the game of someone that says they're going to fight, but they don't, and they haven't, and it's not to tease Conor, you have a license or you don't, right? I'm talking about to be eligible in the pool for biggest draw. What do you have to do to be eligible to be in that pool? Well, you got to fight, and you got to be licensed to fight. Can we agree on that? Because if we can, okay, first off, if we can't, then all of a sudden George St. Pierre becomes eligible again. All of a sudden, Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg become eligible. If they say, well, I would, put me in there, I want to. If that is what we're including, now you're going to have to deal with the most popular Muslim athlete in the world in Khabib if he just makes the same statement. So do you see where we have to put it in? We have to put it in who's eligible? So you are down to Sean O'Malley, Israel Adesanya. But one of them has the belt. one of them is going to headline the Sphere. One of them went to Miami this year and did damn near 15 million at the box office, which was not supposed to happen. So, do we have our answer? Is Sean O'Malley the most popular guy in the sport? You know what would be fun? I don't know if I'll do this, but you know what would have been fun? I should go to that same community page and I should ask you guys, who would win between Conor McGregor and Israel Adesanya? And the reason I should do that is to demonstrate and illustrate for you that these are popularity contests. They're not actually who you think is going to win. It's who do you want to win, right? It's no different than in school. Hey, that guy's tougher than that guy. Well, you didn't mean it, and they're not going to fight. You don't even necessarily want to see him fight, but you like that guy more. You want him to have the compliment. Get two beautiful girls. Who's the prettier girl? Well, one of them was nice to you on the school bus 5 years ago, and you've never met the other one, right? I mean, do you see it? Boom. It's popularity contest. You guys sided 50-50 with O'Malley. That really is an incredible number. It truly is an incredible number. We're double that, triple that, quadruple that. That'd be the biggest in the arena world. You think 15,000 is a real number? T-Mobile sits 15,000. Half of them are showing up to watch O'Malley. It's down to O'Malley and Izzy. But one of them is headlining the Sphere. One of them is the world champion. One of them did just south of 15 million at a box office. Maybe it's not between O'Malley and Izzy. Maybe it's not between O'Malley and anybody. Umar Nurmagomedov has come out and told the media that he has been promised a world title match if he wins this weekend against Corey Sandhagen. So, interesting. Interesting for a few reasons. First off, and this has happened once before, it ended up backfiring, but it's happened once before. Had it not happened once before, and had I not been such a brilliant mind within the sport, I'm likely to tell you, no, hey, it's not done this way. But it has actually happened once before. And what am I talking about? I'm talking about having your number one contender decided before you have your champion decided. Like, if we're going to take Umar and Umar gets over on Corey. Umar becomes number one contender. Okay, great. He's number one contender to fight the winner of Merab O'Malley. But no matter who it is, like, if it's Merab, Umar is going to go against Merab, where? Where would that be true? Where are they going to fight? Where? What location? What build? Where are they going to fight? First fight of the night? Where are you going to put Merab versus Umar? It's going to be Umar versus O'Malley, your sports Vegas star versus Umar. I'm just asking you these questions. Like, does that seem right? Oh, by the way, I warned this sport. I mean, the entire sport. I used to be on a show called UFC Tonight. UFC Tonight was a great show, and one of the co-hosts on a show couldn't quit breaking rules. Gets removed from the show. Everybody watched for him. It's gone, but I had such great memories from it. If this host could have just done things the right way. I went on UFC Tonight, and I told them in 2012, I looked at the camera, and I told our community, do not keep signing these Russians unless you want a Russian invasion. And the Russian invasion is that these guys are going to take over. This is a whole nother deal. And I happen to know about it because I was an amateur wrestler. I happen to know about this geographical location. I happen to know the way that they came up. I happen to know the support that they had from the government. It's a different deal. And I warned them. And now Umar is saying that he's been promised a chance, which, by the way, completely undefeated. That would be great. You get over on Sandhagen, like, Umar is a real stud. But I'm just looking at that, and I'm saying, well, Corey didn't say the same thing. Does that happen? Does the UFC go to one guy and tell him? And if so, how? He doesn't speak the language. I mean, I'm just suggesting for you, is there room for a misunderstanding here? How did Umar get a phone call and get told that if he wins, he's going to fight the winner of, and we don't even know who it is? We still got to do O'Malley and Merab. So Umar comes to the finals before O'Malley or Merab does? I don't know. That, okay. But Sanhagen didn't say that was told to him. Now, whether it was or not, he hasn't said it yet. And when I talk about the Russian invasion, you got to understand what we've got. Got Islam, who's becoming a massive star. Like, go to Islam. You may not know. You might go, Islam's not a big star. Go to his social media. Come back and tell me he's not over. But you have Uncle Liev signed. Uncle Liev is a nightmare of a matchup for our current champion. And I'm just sharing that because if you put Umar into the finals and you already got Uncle Liev in the finals and you already got a strap around Islam, like that very invasion that I warned you about 12 years ago is very possible to be upon us. So what do you guys think about that? Does it change the match? Do you believe that Umar could be in a number one contenders match against Corey, but Corey is not in a number one contenders match against Umar? Do you believe that? And it certainly would become problematic. I mean, I'll let you know that right now. It's going to be a big effing problem. If my opponent on Saturday, who's got home court advantage and that I flew all the way out here to fight, and I'm only facing him because nobody else will, and somebody in this part of the world whispered in somebody else's ear, I want that guy on the card. If he is being promised something that I am not, we have a problem. It's not a problem you couldn't work through, but we have a problem. So I'm just asking you, do you believe that that happened? Do you believe that somebody, through another person, because you gotta have an interpreter involved, gave a message to Umar that they didn't give to Corey? Do you believe you're going to have a number one contender established prior to who the opponent is? It always works in reverse. One time in UFC history have we done it this way that Umar is suggesting we're doing it. One time we've come up with a number one contender while his opponent is still looming. Does it work? This information is so wildly important that we have correctly. If we have a press conference or we have a press release put out by the organization, and it could be any organization, we're going to take that with a grain of salt. We're going to interpret that, okay, you got a main event that is smaller guys and you don't have a belt up. So you're going to do the next best thing, which is promise that there's a number one contendership for the belt. Now, all of a sudden, it's interesting. We don't have O'Malley on the card, but now we can insert O'Malley to the card. So we're going to take it with a grain of salt. We're going to chalk it up to potential promotion, but not now. This is totally different. To have one of the principals in the fight come out and tell us that a deal was made just with them. It wasn't meant for the world. It wasn't meant to push ticket sales. It wasn't meant to move the needle on ABC. We're going to look at that and go, wow, that's sincere. That is really, really sincere. Hey, Corey, were you told this? You weren't? All right. And we're going to move on. I understand that. But that's what we're saying happened if we think that this statement by Umar is accurate. That's what we're saying we believe happened. We're believing that Umar, see, if it's done quietly and it's done just between them, do you see the difference in the sincerity? So that means you sincerely believe that you're going to put Umar Nurmagomedov potentially against Merab Dzhulashvili. Where are you going to hold that fight? Where on earth are you going to hold that press conference? Where do you think people are going to come out to buy the tickets for that? Now, you could put Nurmagomedov versus Sean O'Malley, sport's biggest star, and you could sell out any building that they play. I understand that, but do you think that deal was really promised? Umar's fantastic. I don't question any of that. Neither is Merab. All of these guys are great. But if you're trying to make a poster and you're trying to move tickets, you want Sandhagen and you want him against Sean. So, interesting spot, interesting comment. Is it accurate? Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chale, like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chale. Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, and how does my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss like the majority of the male population does, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that actually work, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized, chewable oral spray and serum treatment options so you can find what works best for you. Reaching out for help in this area can feel a bit embarrassing, but Hims has made this process so dignified and simple. All you have to do is answer a few questions online and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. No in-person visits to the doctor or pharmacy are needed. The whole process is 100% online. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get that confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/chale. That's Hims. HIMS.com/chale, like the famous gangster. For your personalized hair loss treatment options, HIMS.com/chale. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
All right, we're over here at Bad Guy Inc. Somebody just said in the studio, hey, there was no way that Fedor was going to lose to Verdum. I'm thinking, what are you bringing that example up for? And they use it as a segue to say, do you really believe that Tom can beat John Jones? Now, the answer to that is no. No, I'm telling you what you think. I'm not telling you what I think. I'm telling you what you think. No, you don't think that. Can he beat him? Oh, hell yeah. Do we have imperial evidence, tangible, that he can beat him? Oh, yeah. I'm talking about Tom. Oh, yeah, if you use the word could, sure. But if you tell me that you think Tom can beat John Jones, you're telling me that Tom's going to stop John Jones. And John Jones has never done anything in his career to make us believe that he is going to tap. And that pains me to have to compliment him like that. But that is one tough son of a bitch, period. Vitor had him locked out. Gustafson is ahead. John's got to come back and win round five. How are you going to win round five, which is a cardio battle against a cardio machine, particularly when you're off at the club twice a week? Can't happen. Not going to happen. It did. Swollen eye, black and blue. His toe came out of his skin when he fought me. He wrapped it himself to go to the press conference. He didn't want to miss his press conference. So he wraps it himself because the doctors refused. That's inappropriate treatment. We're not going to do that. Get in the car. We're taking you to the hospital. Grabbed the gauze and the ace bandage, wrapped it himself. Never even told anybody that he did. Like, he didn't come out and go, look what I know. I'm sharing that with you. This is a tough guy, guys. This is a tough guy. And when it comes to grit, and you got to have it. You got to have it. We know for sure that John does. Now, that doesn't mean that Tom does not. But we don't know that. And we don't know that those punches are as hard and as fast, which equal accuracy in round two. We don't know that when his eye is swollen, that he's going to push forward. We saw an injury happen to his leg. Just for example, this was not compound. This was an injury that happened to his leg. It was terrible. It was a bad one, but not for nothing. The fight stopped. We've had injuries happen to John where bones have come out of his body and the fight did not stop. I'm just sharing for you that the evidence and the proof that we have, Tom is big. History says the younger guy wins. If the younger guy is also bigger, history says he wins easily. I'm not discounting it, but you're still laughed at. Could he beat him? Yeah. Would he beat him? Do you truly believe with a W? Would. Do you truly believe that? No, you don't. The athletic portion of the match expires after the first round. And it is for sure long gone by round three. By round three, you're in a tough guy contest. Generally by round two. This is now attrition. How many miles did you put in? How bad do you want it? How deep can you dig? How important is that paycheck to you? And compare all the things I just asked up against his. And Tom might have that. Tom has done things we've never seen. Tom has now put down three heavyweights that were plus 250 pounds with one punch. Mike Tyson didn't do that. Not a single time. Not a single time in the pros did Mike Tyson put somebody down with one punch. That was over 250. It's a hard thing to do. I mean, just how hard is Tom hitting these guys? It's hard to know. Tom's putting these guys down to the canvas. Again, third time, but he's putting them down to the canvas where maybe you get four shots, and just from the position of his body, maybe you get four shots and the guy's covering a little bit. Tom's getting one. He's getting one for wherever everybody else would get four. Do you know why? Not because they're early stoppages, like so many people have suggested, but because the referee that's right there can see. He can hear. He's aware of the power being put on them, and he's stopping Tom at one where other fighters would have gotten four. It's an incredible thing. But there's not a part of you that believes Tom and John go to a decision and Tom beats him. Beats him on the judges' scorecards. Won more rounds than John did. There's not a part of you that believes that. And when we're armed with the fact of the pain that John has dealt with, you don't really believe that John's going to tap out. So you're left with getting KO'd. And much like I told you, we haven't seen any evidence from John Jones, from the armbar to the toe pop. And now there isn't any evidence from John Jones that he's going to submit. We've never seen John taken off his feet. we've never seen John wobbled. We never shit what they call on the baby deer legs. Like, we just don't have any evidence in place. We just don't. Now, does Tom have such an overwhelming power? Maybe. Yeah, he just might. But there's so many questions out there. I mean, I'm really trying to think this through. Like, if Tom and John were going to fight right now and I got to make a prediction, who am I going to put the curse on? Probably Tom. Probably. History says. I'd have to see what the odds were of what DraftKings was doing. History says the younger guy. History says when the younger guy is the bigger guy, always that guy. Always. Find an example. You won't. And probably, but it's not because of evidence that I have. It's really based on evidence that I don't have. I haven't seen enough Tom. I haven't seen Tom in championship rounds, and neither of you, never, ever, in his career, ever. I remember the first time I got to him. I can just remember. It's different. It's a different experience. You're doing a different sport. You change one rule, you change the sport. How would he do? Well, I like his training. I like his training methods. I think he'd probably do pretty well. Francis made it through championship rounds. Francis made it a half hour with Tyson Fury. Relevance being guys carrying that muscle, carrying that extra size. They're not really meant for duration. Brock Lesnar was not meant for duration. Alistair Overeem, these guys were not meant to be out there all night. It was the smaller guys. It was the Cain Velasquez. It was the Stipes. It was the Randy Couture's that could do it at that weight class. So it's not a matter of what evidence do I have. It's a matter of what evidence that I don't have. But if you were asked the question, the same one I was just asked, would Tom beat John right now? If they were going to fight, would Tom beat him? Not could he beat him, would he beat him? So now you're putting your expertise, you're putting your knowledge. If you say yes, you're also saying that he finishes him. And if you believe he finishes him, you're saying he knocks him out. I really, really asked you, do you believe that John Jones, with that reach, with the length, with the kicks, with all his abilities, do you really believe?
Chad, we may have an answer here.
Let's hear it.
I did a post on our community page. Does anyone think Tom Masvidal beats John Jones? Yes, Tom wins at 514 votes is 69%. John wins is at 31%.
And you guys could hear the voice of Ryan there. I'm just telling you, if you looked a little bit closer, like if that fight went off, people are drunk on excitement. They are drunk on nostalgia. They've seen Tom at heavyweight a number of times putting down really good guys that were said that they couldn't be put down. I mean, I asked you, could he put Jones down? Jones has never even been knocked down. How do you think he could knock him out? Well, Sergey Pavlich had never been knocked down. So I would listen. But if you really challenged yourself, I mean, think about what you're saying. See, that's where it changes things. I do believe I made a point to you, and I do believe I've woken you up. I splashed some cold water in your face that, yes, if you believe Tom is going to win, you do believe he finishes him, and you do believe he knocks him out. And if we start playing that game, you believe he knocks him out inside of three, don't you? And that just makes it a lot harder. It just makes it a lot harder. I mean, DraftKings will pay you. You got every specific way there. That's going to pay you about 14 to 1. It's pretty good. Hard to do, is my point. Do you think it could happen? Yeah, I know you do. I know you do, but that's not what we were asked. Do you believe it would happen? Do you really believe that? Is going to fight Moicano if I have my way. Paddy Pimblett's going to fight Moicano if Moicano has his way. Paddy Pimblett is going to fight Moicano if Paddy has his way. Sounds like we got a fight, doesn't it? It sounds like we have a fight. And you got to dangle just enough with Paddy. You got to dangle in your matchups just enough of an idea that he's going to get his ass kicked. That's where the crowd likes. Now, they like Paddy a little too much for it to be a lock. Like, they don't want to see Paddy in there with a grizzly bear. But they also have seen Paddy have enough success that they need to have an idea that maybe this is the night. Maybe that's the drama that I get tonight. Maybe it's a celebration for young Paddy. But maybe it's a ha-ha to young Patty, right? Maybe. That's what was so perfect about the King-Green matchup. King Green was the official favorite. My partner's DraftKings. Official favorite was King Green. Now, Moicano would be a meaningful step up. I didn't fully know how good Moicano was until his last fight. I knew he was fun, and I knew he was tough. Good is a different question. What Moicano did to Jalen Turner was a shock. Jalen Turner is athletic. He is long. He's dangerous. I mean, he's sharp. His elbows are sharp. His knees are sharp. Like, Jalen, that's a hard night out, any way that you want to do it. And for Moicano to be able to close that distance and get Turner down repeatedly, start realizing, hey, there's more to this Moicano, right? Like, anytime you bring in a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, anytime, who can wrestle? When has that formula not worked out since 1993? How many of you even had? All the success Hoyce had, he didn't wrestle. He grappled, and then he could do jiu-jitsu. Like, I'm just reminding you. Damian Maia didn't wrestle great. He'd scramble and get on top. Moicano will take your ass down, and he's got a black belt. Like, just to share with you, they continually talk about how great Patty is on the ground, but we haven't seen that. That's just something they say. I mean, I got to tell you, I've dealt with that forever, and I don't think that Patty would disagree with me. Like, to come out and say that he's great on the ground, okay, but what are you basing that on? You saw him in practice one day? Or you guys were at the hotel together, and you say, hey, shook hands, and you rolled around together. Boy, was he impressive. Now, does it mean that he was impressive in comparison to other guys that actually do grappling, like, say, an Olympian, for example, or, say, somebody that went through Abu Dhabi or the process, for example? Or do you mean you didn't expect that he had grappling, and it turned out he was really good at grappling? Like, it's a very different comment. It's a very different compliment. But I think that's a tough sell. To believe if Moicano got on top, he couldn't handle himself. And you see where that fight gets really interesting, doesn't it? I just told you we have no evidence of Patty's great grappling. I just said that. And Patty just did 2 submissions on Saturday. He not only choked a guy, he armbarred a guy. Both of them worked. You'd have to tap from the armbar or the ref would stop it if you were awake to do so. And I'm dismissing him. But I love that Patty called him out. Patty only had one ingredient that other stars don't have. Like, if you were to follow Sean O'Malley, you would follow Israel Adesanya. The guys that got to the top that had a quick wit and a sharp tongue, and people wanted the entertainment side. The guys that got to the top did do one thing, all of them, that Patty did not. They called people out. And they didn't just call a name. Sometimes it would be looser than that. I want a top 10 guy. Okay, great. I know we don't love those callouts, but Patty did neither. He didn't call for a name. He didn't call for title shots. He didn't call for contenderships, and he didn't call for rankings. He really gave us no idea at all who he wanted to fight. Well, that's changed. He called for King Green. You see the kind of stroke that apparently Patty has. He calls for King Green. He's fighting King Green. He's now calling for Moicano, and I think he's going to get Moicano. Patty is 2 fights away. They got to be the right fights. He is 2 fights away from fighting for a world championship. And I don't mean that Dana will book him, that Dana will promote him and elevate him into championship rounds, into a championship fight, into a main event of a pay-per-view. That's at least not all I mean. What I mean is we're going to be calling for it. It's going to be the right thing to do. We're going to see it. We're going to demand it. If Patty has 2 more wins, the right wins, but Moicano's one of them. You jump in there with a Moicano, boom, you bounce up here. When I look at those rankings, the one that jumps off the page for me is Chandler. But Chandler and Patty, you know, they kind of like each other. And they see each other in the back. There's greetings and they get along. Like, I don't know how much I'm predicting for you these will happen. I'm just sharing for you. Patty is finally calling people out. Patty has become a big star the same way that many other guys got over. But there was one thing that was missing. It was glaringly, blatantly, obviously missing from his formula, which was the call out. And Moicano doesn't represent the first person that Patty called out. It represents the second. The first person he called out was King Green, and he got that fight. Patty the Batty is going to be fighting Moicano. And that's great news. Because Moicano needs money. Israel Adesanya should not be fighting. He should not be in a title fight. He should retire. Now, these are the words of Dreykus du Plessis. Not a quote, but this is the words. And it's very fascinating because he's obviously self-projection, right? He's letting us know who he is. He's letting us know how his mind works. That's very common. What Dreykus is saying, he's questioning, is he saying, hey, you've reached the top. What are you doing? Do you have the hunger to try to reclimb? Not to mention, I'm a new guy. I'm almost a new era. So now you're going there. Very interesting. First time I was ever part of this, high school. Teacher has us go outside and look at a leaf. Oregon, there's leaves everywhere. Go outside and look at a leaf and write a paragraph about that leaf. Okay, I'll go write a leaf, and the leaf I was seeing was all dried up. It dried up, and it was like kind of bouncing within the wind. And it goes down, this car drives right over it. And it breaks into all sorts of pieces. I don't know what that means. That's what I saw. She said to write a paragraph on a leaf. It was actually a very hard assignment for me. Over time, I got to where I could write, I could talk a little bit better, but I didn't understand, right as a leaf. So we come back into class, and the teacher informs us that the paragraph that we just wrote about the leaf is actually about ourselves. And so then she asks you to go around the class, if you choose, stand up, and then read. And boy, she was right. I knew these guys. These are my classmates. As they were reading, some of them were deep, some of them were sad. And I didn't read mine. Because I don't know what it means to be a leaf that was light. It was like wasn't wetted down like some in Oregon. It was light. It was the wind. Just the wind of traffic would make it bounce, and the car runs over it. That's just what happened. The leaf that I looked at, it's just what happened. I didn't see the self-projection, but I started to learn this concept and idea, and you see it in fighting all the time. I don't know what makes Dreykus tick. I know one of the great stories, the rise from nothing to where he is. Dreykus did it as fast and largely the same way. He didn't have to work quite as hard at it, but boy, it was that same blueprint as Bilal Muhammad. Bilal wasn't going to be a main event. Bilal wasn't going to be main event of pay-per-views. He wasn't going to be title fights. He wasn't going to be the guy in the face of a weight class. He just wasn't. Neither was Dreykus. Floating around, spoke up, said, hey, wait a minute. I'm better than all that. And I challenge you so I can go out there and prove it. And that's a really incredible thing when somebody does that. When you get your rise to the top, how long can you stay there? How long do you want to stay there? And that's what Dreykus is talking about with Israel Adesanya. Does he want to be here? Why? Why do you want to be here? Because if you beat me, you just get back what you've already had. So what is the point of beating me? And then if you beat me, it looks like you draw into Whitaker again, which he's wrong about that, actually. But and you've already done that a few times. So what would your motivation be? And Dreykus is letting us know that if he made it to the top and he cleared out a division, and he got known as a goat or one of the goats of the division, he's going to call it, walk away. And it's a dream everybody has. Very few guys do it. It's very hard to leave that on the table, but the mindset doesn't change. What do you suppose Izzy's motivation is? I think that Dreykus asks a very fair question. Conor McGregor's coach, right? Coach Kavanaugh, one of the most respected coaches in MMA, told the world and told Conor. When Conor was coming back, he said, before you do that and before you get on these mats, we are going to sit down. I'm going to ask you one question. And you got to have an answer for it. Why? Why are you coming back? Why are we doing this? And guys, as simple as that may sound, it is so important to find your why. And there's a lot of things you can get away with in life. There's more things than not that you can be a percentage in. You could be 30% in, but that's what it takes. Or you could even be 80% in, but that's what it takes. To be the world champion, to be the sharpest, to be the best. There's so many things that go into that. Just the studying of film. Just the guys that are sitting down. Some of them are in high school right now, and they're watching film on Izzy. They're trying to study what he does. They're going in the gym and working on it. But then they're also working on counters. They're thinking about him nonstop. If there's a time in your life when you make it to the absolute best in the world, that's going to be a rare time. Great job. To stay there, it's a whole other game. It's not a continuation of the same game. It's a whole other game. Now, let's say what Drinkus is referring to. He's not talking about getting there. He's not talking about staying there. He's talking about going down and having to come back up. Blue side. First walk. Challenger. Underdog. That is what Drinkus is speaking to. And I believe that Izzy does have an answer. I believe Izzy dealt with pain when he was younger. The aggressiveness that Izzy will have in his eyes at times when he feels as being attacked, I believe there was pain in his youth. And some of that was most likely economic. And Izzy is not done being motivated. And he is not done wanting to be the best. And by the way, in this specific case with Drinkus, it's personal. I think. This is what I think. I don't know that Izzy will ever answer the question. I don't know that Izzy will put the thought into it that I've even just put into telling you about the question right now, but I hope that he does. I hope he gets asked it. It's a very fair question. And it's not as though that same gun can't be pointed at Drinkus. Drinkus is no longer an undercard with 300 Twitter followers. And us not knowing how to say Drinkus Duplessis to the point that we called him DDP. That was only a year ago, guys. Only a year ago, we were calling him DDP because we didn't know how to say Drinkus Duplessis. So maybe he wants to take his bow. Maybe he wants to have a moment in the spotlight. Maybe he wants to defend once, twice. I love the question. Drinkus is fair to ask it. And if Drinkus truly can believe that Izzy doesn't have that same desire and want, it can give him a competitive edge. I know people in my spot love to talk to you guys about confidence. You must be confident, but they don't explain it. If it's a pie chart, the whole thing doesn't need to be colored blue. I have confidence. I don't doubt it at all. No. 90% of it can be red. You need a sliver. That's what you got to have. Hope. Just enough hope. Because you want to make sure in that chart there's fear. Because that's what creates an urgency. That's what creates victory. And if Drinkus believes that he has a meaningful advantage in terms of want and desire over Izzy, it's helpful. And Izzy could counter it. He just has to answer the question. What happens if Adesanya loses? I don't know that it's different than if Adesanya wins. I mean, let me start at the beginning. You got to be very rational when these fights are done, and most guys are not. Like, right now is a time where we can talk and kind of lay out a roadmap. But if we start talking, we lay out a roadmap that win or lose, Izzy's done. Win or lose, Izzy's done. If we lay that out, it doesn't work. It's never worked. It's not a good idea for marketing, for one thing. It doesn't put you in a good light with the organization. And athletes always get it wrong. They think the fans are going to really lock on. Supply and demand, this is my last one. They're all going to be behind me. Way to go. Fans don't diminish. They go somewhere else. So if you announce this is my last one, that belief that you have that they're going to raise you up and be so happy for you and so proud of you and great job with the next chapter in your life, it's not true. Fans don't go away. And I've had this asked so many times. Right? I've been there and heard. The great ones, I've heard the Kevin Iolis and the John Morgans ask this of Dana, and they're very serious. Hey, Conor's not coming back. Hey, Ronda's going to retire. I can go back to when it was Randy was going to go this way and Tito was going to something called WFA. What are you going to do? It's a star-driven business. These are your stars. And the thing that those people, even the top guys, did not understand is the fans don't leave. They go somewhere else. And the reason I tell you that, when your career comes to an end, the fan's career as a fan does not. So when you start doing this, right, this ahead of time, talking about my topic here, what does Izzy do with a loss? What does he do with a win? Why would it be any different? And I'm asking the question. Izzy might have a great response. Izzy might look at us and go, hey, guys, what are you talking about? I am so hungry. I am just getting started. I just want to fight. I don't even care about the champion. You're talking about championships. I don't care if Duplessis had lost to Strickland. I'm not fighting Strickland in Perth. I'm fighting Duplessis. This is personal. Great. You have my attention. And frankly, if that came from Izzy, I would believe him. But the concept doesn't change. Why? If we're questioning motivation, and what does it take, and how bad do you want to be in there? Because Duplessis is the one that brought this up. Duplessis asked that about Izzy, and he was self-projecting, but it was still an interesting question by Duplessis. I would like an answer. If Izzy loses, and now he's just one of the guys, he would represent a different era. Duplessis would represent the new era, and like so many other guys that were great in one era, they can't transfer it. But this would be what was key. What is Izzy going to do? Izzy doesn't have the same problem as Ronda Rousey in terms of contract, but he's not far off. Izzy had the most beautiful contract in the UFC 3 years ago. I'm just sharing, like, things do change. Ronda Rousey had to retire because the UFC could not book her. Now, the UFC could not book her in terms of justifying her amount anywhere other than a main event, and you could have put a main event on a pay-per-view, particularly with women, unless it was a world title fight, right? Like, that has never happened. Before you start arguing with me, it has never happened. There's never been two women, pay-per-view, main event, not for the belt. And I just share that with you that Izzy's not far off in terms of what he's getting paid. He would be a very hard guy to put second fight of the night on the main card. He'd be a hard guy to put third fight of the night. You could put him in a co-spot. But his contract is what you give main eventers. So he would be in a very interesting spot if he was to lose to Duplessis and just become one of the boys and he's just floating around. But why would that change if he won? I was never champion. But a guy that I looked to that was champion, a guy named Les Gutchess, became the world champion. And he told me, it's great for a week. 1 week, it's great. And then it will be the most depressing moment of your life because, you say, what do I do now? My whole life was towards this one thing, but now that I have this one thing, what do I do now? And that's as simple as Les put it. But everybody goes through that. Is Izzy hungry enough? Is Izzy angry enough? I don't know that Izzy has any heat with Strickland, just for example. And whether Strickland beat him or not, the rematch was offered and Izzy said, no, I just don't know that he has any heat with Strickland on a personal level. I don't think he has any heat or interest in Paulo Costa anymore. I know he doesn't have any heat or interest in Robert Whittaker. So I'm just sharing with you, like a lot of what Izzy does, there might be a belt as a byproduct. But I don't believe that Izzy does it for the belt. When he fought Yoel Romero, whatever that was about. But it wasn't just about the belt. And I feel like the same thing is right with Duplessis. Like, I do feel when we ask the question to Izzy, what is your motivation, that he would have an answer. But if he gets past Duplessis, win or lose. If he wins and you want to go bring in Chimaev, great. If you want to start getting Bo Nickel on a trajectory, which it appears nobody wants to do except for me, great. And the reason I say those two guys, that would be parody and it would be something new. If Chimaev can't get that title shot, I wish that they would tell us now. If there is something about the visa and he can't leave and therefore it's going to project you from being an international champion, I wish that they would tell us now because there really isn't much left for Izzy to do. Izzy's not only beaten all these guys, he's beaten them twice. And Izzy versus Duplessis is not likely to be a great fight. One guy is very likely to beat the hell out of the other guy. And the only reason I bring that up is, like, going into a rematch from this, you're probably not getting there. And it would just add to the idea of, what does Izzy do next? And there's such a common belief that with a loss, something changes. Why is that? Why is that in this sport? Why is it so outcome-based? I mean, I will watch guys get their ass kicked. And boxing is more guilty than MMA. They will get their ass kicked. They look terrible. Not just bad. They look terrible. Knock the guy out and win. And because they won, everything is wonderful. They'll literally talk like that with our coaches. Well, we did this and this, so we're going to make sure we do this and this for the next one, because look at this outcome. It's exactly what we wanted. No, you looked awful. You really need to go change. You really need to fix some things. But it's not looked at that way. And the same thing goes in reverse. If you go out there and you have a wonderful performance, but it goes against you, you're the guy that got caught. Or the judges went with you, they'll throw everything out. They'll fire their trainers and they'll start over from the beginning. Why would it be different? What is the difference? I mean, don't you believe that Izzy, if we're just purely questioning his motivation, which his opponent, Duplessis, did, wouldn't it stand to reason that he would be more motivated to get a belt than to defend a belt? I'm aware that we don't actually know, unfortunately. But it would seem if the whole reason we're talking about retirement is because there's nothing to do or nothing that you would want and get up for to do, it would seem taking on your biggest rival in a comeback match for the belt, that you were a 6-1 favorite to never lose in the first place. I mean, it would just seem as though that's the big... So why, with a victory, would his decision be any different than with a loss? We're just asking questions over here. But if we have a chance to ask the actual question, ask him that one for me. No, Kamara, stop. And by the way, answer your phone when I call you. You answer your phone. What's the big deal? I know you have it. Push that. Go, the greatest mind in the sport is calling me. He probably needs to tell me something. And I do, and it's about you. I'm not calling to borrow money. I'm not calling to ask you to come on the show. You don't have to do anything. I'm calling with information to hand you because you apparently don't have it. Kamaru Usman, who might be the toughest, he might be the baddest. I mean, when you're talking about the BMF belt, he needs to be considered. He is so tough, and he is such a badass. He went and fought Chimaev on 8 days' notice at a weight class he doesn't fight at. Do you guys remember that? He is so tough and such a badass, he got knocked out with a head kick that will rattle you and give you PTSD forever, flew to that guy's hometown just to fight him again. This is how tough he is. Kamaru Usman is so tough that he has just called out Shavkat what? What's his last name? I'm not trying to be a dick. Shavkat Ramayev? Rakhmonov. And you've got to really understand, there was a call out of Shavkat. And I have to give credit to Del Lena, and I do. But it didn't really get off the ground. And it was kind of one of those interesting matches where Shavkat, who's 16-0, if you're building him because you can't quite give him a title fight now, that wouldn't make a level of sense that he goes into a title fight after Jack Della Lima. And I give Jack full credit, by the way. But I'm sharing with you the Ian Garry call out of Rakhmonov. That was, right? That's loose. You're just not going to see that fight. You are going to see Kamaru Usman versus Rakhmonov. If that is sincerely the fight that Usman wants. Now, the reason I'm calling him and trying to get up his ass, he apparently hasn't been following the media. The media, myself, Brendan Schaub, Jesse on Fire, Lorisenko, Brett Okamoto, Ariel Helwani. Did Ariel weigh in on that? He weighed in, but is he on our side? Either way, it's blowing in Kamaru Usman's direction to get him and Muhammad together right now because, see, when Usman laid his plan out, I'm going to go stomp out Rachmaninoff, which I think is what he said. I'm going to go stomp out Rachmaninoff. He said something like that. It was like, I'm not just going to go get a win over him. He's going to crush this guy. I mean, it was something as a way of being undeniable for a world title fight against Muhammad. And that's the part where he's being a Sandhagen. The media is trying to push that fight right now. Dean Thomas went on ESPN and called for that fight. That's huge, guys. That's huge. Before you get into rankings, you start looking at numbers, of which, by the way, lines up perfectly. Before you do anything like that, you must have the mandate of the masses. You will not get driven into a world title fight. At 170 pounds right now, it is dealer's choice. They can go straight to Covington. They can go right to Ian Gary. I think their likelihood of going to Rachmaninoff is very small because I can't picture a face-off with these guys and I can't picture a press conference. And it's very hard in today's era to do a main event without a meaningful press conference. And just one will do, but you got to get it. Now, Dana used to have to do these all the time, but that's before social media came around. That's before he had deals with network television. And I'm just sharing, like, it is a little bit of a different game right now. When Dean Thomas goes on ESPN and calls for the fight, it's a really big deal. And all that's going to do, guys, all that's going to do is kickstart things. Now, you got to take it from there, right? You got to put the gas on that bike, but it will kickstart it. It will give you a spark. It won't get you the job, but it'll get you the interview. Are you fought? Do I need another adage? You can't just come. All right, I think you guys understand the point. But he had it. He had it. I backed him. Brendan Schaub backed him. Jesse backed him. Laura backed him. Brett backed him. Mark Raimondi, who's covering baseball now, came back to our sport just to mention that. I'm sure Steven Morocco would even like to see that fight. I mean, I'm just sharing for you somewhere Kamara Sandhagen this thing and called for something else to do. It's very hard to call for a job and then find out you got a better job. Now, it goes the other way. You could call for a title fight and fall into a number one contenders match. But I don't know of a time that you could tell me that you called for a number one contenders match and got elevated to a title fight. It's called a Sandhagen. And if Kamara would have answered his phone, he wouldn't have done this. But he didn't answer his phone. Do you think he doesn't have my number? Or do you think he just didn't want to talk to Uncle Chael? Dustin Poirier, let's try to unpack this. I've never seen anybody's pending retirement be extended to this degree. And I don't think that Dustin's having fun with you guys. I don't think he's going back and forth. I think he's just in a spot where he hasn't got this worked out. You know, he gets back from his fight. You've got the post-fight blues. Whether you win or lose, you got the post-fight blues. And then he had some injuries. There was something to the knee. I know that the nose was broken. He dealt with a rib injury all the way back, you know, 3 weeks prior to that Islam fight. At what point do you form these decisions? And I got to work with Dustin. I got to see him, but I also got to work with him. And he got asked this question on the air. And he said, you know, if there's something interesting, that's the word that he used. If there's something interesting for me, I'll do one more. But at this point, I can't even imagine what that would be. Which means I'm done. So he kind of let us know what he would like to do, which is one more, but you know, I don't think he wants a situation like St. Denis. I don't think Dustin wants to be anything lower than a main event, anything lower than, wow, what's going to happen here? So fast forward to today. I mean, guys, that was like 3 weeks ago, that story that I just told you, a month ago. When I told you I worked with him, fast forward to today, he says, look, here's what I'm going to do. I'm out of the gym, hanging out with my wife, you know, we're eating what we want, we're relaxing. I know what he means by that. You don't feel like doing anything at that point. You ever feel like a tough guy? You ever get pissed off? Go fight somebody. Go have a big meal. You won't feel that way. Like, there's nothing that makes you change, wanting to be active and wanting to be busy, like eating poorly for
a number of weeks. So I just share that I understood what he meant. He's going to eat good. He's going to spend a month. He's going to get back in the gym. He's not only going to eat better, focus more, he's also going to work out so that he's in a good and healthy place to make the decision. And you want to know why that's so relevant? Because if you don't feel good, you don't feel like doing it, you now want to say no. It's not really a choice. If you feel good, if you're in shape, if everything's going good, now it's a choice. Do I want to do this? Do I not want to do it? So I love what Dustin's saying, because I get it. I get the point, and I feel like it's very well thought out. I know so many things can happen in the moment. Guys will retire on the spot, but they'll retire for a number of reasons. Like when George Masvidal retired, it wasn't because he didn't want to keep fighting. It's because he had lost again and he wasn't sure he was going to get booked. So let me just get in front of this thing. I don't tease him for saying that. I'm sharing with you, it was a very insincere retirement. I mean, George, he's got his fingers crossed, if you will, and started looking for fights immediately after. And then even found one. Went out there and boxed. I'm sharing with you that if Poirier had done that, if Poirier would have said, yep, I'm retired, and then rethought it and goes, hey, no, wait a minute, that was the heat of the moment, and it was Islam, and my knee hurt, I really didn't understand the question. I'd just been choked out a minute ago. Like, then all of a sudden, you don't say that, now you have the comeback fight. So many comeback fights are because somebody retired that never meant it. For whatever reason, whether it was like the Masvidal one where you get your fingers crossed, for whatever reason, they retired. So, one constant we do have with Dustin Poirier, it's got to be something interesting. And he doesn't know who that is. He doesn't have someone that he's looking at that's interesting. And the UFC has said no to some names that you would really like to see fight. You'd have fantasized about getting one more, and they've said no. For various reasons. But largely, if it's going to be your last one, it's very hard for me to make that a feature match. In fact, in the history of the UFC, we only made somebody's last one a feature match one time. And that was on accident. Do you guys know which match I'm talking about? Diaz versus Ferguson is your answer. And so that would put Dustin in an interesting spot. If it really is going to be his last one, then he's going to need a dance partner who is also in his last one. And there are limited guys, but they exist. Like Nick Diaz can't be ignored. Dustin had business with Nate. Nate may become available, but right now Nick is available. And nobody's talking about that. Nobody's talking about Nick versus Dustin. It's a great example by me because it would be interesting. And that is the kind of fight that isn't going to disrupt the rankings. And it is the kind of fight that you could put on, even if you were the UFC, that doesn't put on fights that don't disrupt the rankings. So I offer Nick just to get your mind flowing. But you do have two weight classes. And if he wanted Colby, by example, he knows how to get it. And Dustin does have the goods to make that happen. He's got the goods to do an interview and make that fight very interesting. Does Dustin want to fight at 170? Does he want to fight at 155? It's a situation where he really is turning control over to you guys. He is open to suggestions. I've been with him when he has said as such. But he's also letting us know now he needs something interesting. And he just doesn't know who that would be. 1 month ago, he needed something interesting. He just didn't know who that could be. He's turning it over to you. And you guys aren't computing and coming back with that answer, I believe, because you're not understanding that that's what he's asking you to do. And you got two weight classes, 55 or 70. You want to keep him around? You want to get one more fight? He's only got one criteria. It's got to be interesting. Like, that's not a lot to demand. That's not the kind of guy, right? You start making demands to get yourself out of this business. You start pricing yourself out of the business. You're doing a weight class, or you start, I need a fight that's this big, and that as a way of not having to do it. I want something interesting? That's a small request. Let's give it to him. All right, guys, that's it for today's episode. I appreciate you listening, and I hope you enjoyed the shows from this week and that you hit the follow button if you aren't already. UFC and PFL are in action this weekend. Tyrell Fortune, my guy, in the PFL, hoping to get one step closer to $1 million. I'm going to be back on Tuesday.
I'm going to talk about Tyrell and everything else. And until then, I'm Chael Sonnen. Don't interrupt me. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.